Imagine receiving a phone call from someone who just sounds incredibly professional.
Yeah, like a federal agent or something.
Exactly. Maybe they claim to be a federal agent or a senior fraud investigator at your bank, and they know your home address, the last four digits of your social security number, and like the exact balance in your checking account.
Which is terrifying on its own.
Right. So they calmly inform you that your identity has been compromised, your money is currently being used to fund international crime, and the only way to prove your innocence is to stay on the line, drive to your local branch, and move your entire life savings into a secure federal holding account.
And you have to do it right that second.
Right that second. So would you fall for it? I mean, you might instinctively say no. But last year, criminals used scripts exactly like this to drain over $7.75 billion from people aged 60 and older.
Wow.
That is billion with a B. And that represents a 59% jump from just the previous year.
It is honestly a staggering amount of human devastation. And, keep in mind, those 201,000 complaints you're looking at in the FBI's latest Internet Crime Complaint Center data, those only represent the incidents that were actually reported.
Oh, right. Because so many people don't report it.
Exactly. The true scale of the financial hemorrhage here is undoubtedly much, much higher.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because today we are taking a deep dive into a comprehensive, incredibly revealing document titled The Anatomy of Elder Fraud. We're going to look at the mechanics of this crime, the psychology behind it, and what it takes to actually stop it.
It's going to be a heavy one, but an important one.
Yeah, definitely. But before we get into the weeds, I feel like we need to reset our baseline understanding of what this problem actually is.
Yeah. The mission of this deep dive is to completely shatter the myth that elder fraud is just a simple, consumer awareness issue.
Right.
We have to stop framing this as a matter of gullibility or older folks simply not knowing how to refuse a suspicious phone call. That framing is, well, it's entirely inadequate for the reality of what's happening today.
Because it's not just a single guy in a basement making prank calls anymore.
Not at all. Modern elder fraud is a highly structured, organized form of financial crime. We are talking about syndicates utilizing cyber-enabled deception, deep psychological manipulation, vast networks of money mules, and this rapid cross-border movement of stolen funds.
It's an industry.
It is an industry operating with a level of sophistication that most people just simply do not comprehend.
But wait, I mean, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Isn't this really just a technology gap? Aren't we mostly talking about people who, don't know how to navigate the internet or who might not know how to spot a fake URL or a phishing email?
See, the source material firmly debunks that assumption. Highly educated, financially experienced, and completely technologically competent people fall for these scams all the time.
Really? So it's not about being tech illiterate.
No, the text is very clear that older adults are not inherently less capable of recognizing fraud. The real attraction for these organized criminal groups is purely economic.
Oh, I see. It's just a matter of return on investment.
That's the core of the strategy right there. Older adults have had an entire lifetime to accumulate wealth. They have savings accounts, retirement funds, valuable property, strong credit histories.
They're the ones with the actual assets.
Exactly. If a fraudster runs a high-volume, low-value scam on a 20-something, they might walk away with a few hundred bucks. But the text notes that the average reported loss for these older victims was around $38,500.
Good grief.
And even more terrifying, over 12,400 people reported losing more than $100,000 in a single hit.
That is life-altering money. I mean, that is an entire retirement nest egg wiped out before dinner.
Gone in an afternoon.
So if the financial incentive is that high, the criminals must have an incredibly efficient system for actually extracting that wealth. And, reading through this document, I realized they aren't just cold calling out of a phone book anymore.
No, they're doing their homework.
Yeah, they are looking at property records, social media posts, breach credentials from other hacks, professional histories. They use all this public data to precisely tailor their attacks.
It's highly targeted.
Right. The victim isn't fooled because one email looked genuine. They're fooled because the criminal builds this bespoke crisis using real, verifiable details about the victim's life.
Exactly. They look for any life circumstances that might create an opportunity for manipulation. So, bereavement, recent retirement, reduced social contact, or even just someone who seems anxious and willing to stay on the phone.
They exploit vulnerability.
They construct a believable narrative based on reality. Mm-hmm. They might know the name of your bank, the street you live on, and the fact that your spouse recently passed away.
That's just sick.
When they combine all those facts into a high-pressure scenario, the deception is incredibly powerful.
You know, reading through how this actually works, I came up with an analogy. This isn't a smash-and-grab robbery. It's like a psychological heist.
Oh, psychological heist is a phenomenal way to describe it.
Yeah, because the criminal carefully manages the victim every step of the way.
Yeah.
From the very first point of contact right down to the final wire transfer.
Absolutely. The initial contact, whether it's a pop-up on a computer, a text message, or a phone call, is entirely engineered to create one of three specific emotional states.
And what are those?
Fear, concern for another person, or the anticipation of financial gain.
So what does this all mean for the actual moment of this scam? Like, how does it play out in real time?
Well, let's break down the mechanics of isolation, specifically looking at what the text calls the false security alert model. It usually starts with a message claiming your computer has malware or your bank account is tied to a money laundering investigation.
Okay, so total panic mode.
The moment they get you on the phone, the interaction becomes tightly controlled. They trigger what psychologists call an amygdala hijack.
An amygdala hijack.
Right. By manufacturing intense fear and urgency, they force the victim's brain into survival mode. The prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain responsible for logical reasoning and critical thinking, effectively shuts down.
You literally lose the cognitive ability to step back and analyze the situation.
Yeah.
Because your brain is screaming that you are in immediate danger.
Exactly. And while you are in that compromised state, they isolate you. They might keep you on the line for hours. They will transfer you between different fake departments.
So it sounds super official.
Right. You start by talking to a supposed security specialist. Then they transfer you to a fake bank investigator and then maybe a fake government official or a police officer.
Creating this closed loop of reality where every single person you talk to validates the story of the last person you talked to.
All while deliberately cutting you off from your actual support network, they will order you not to speak to your relatives or actual bank staff, claiming the investigation is strictly confidential.
Or that the bank tellers are in on it.
Yes. They say the local bank employees might be the ones stealing from you. They instruct you to stay on the phone while you drive to the bank and even tell you exactly how to lie to the teller about why you are withdrawing the money.
What do they tell them to say?
Usually telling you to say it's for home renovations or buying a car.
This is where the cruel irony of this whole thing really hits hard. The text highlights a devastating detail. In these false security alert scams, the victims are told they must move their money to a quote-unquote secure or government-controlled account to protect it.
Right, protect it.
The tragedy is that victims believe they are fixing a security problem. They think they're being proactive and responsible. They don't think they're voluntarily paying a stranger. They think they're saving their own life savings.
It is incredibly cruel. They weaponize the victim's own sense of responsibility against them. And then comes the final stage, the payment. The payment stage is engineered entirely to reduce reversibility.
Meaning they want the money gone before the victim's prefrontal cortex comes back online and they can hit the undo button.
That is why criminals demand payment via bank wire transfers, cryptocurrency ATMs, physical cash, gold couriers, or gift cards.
Gift cards, I mean, that's just wild.
Right. But these methods move value rapidly and severely complicate any chance of recovery. No legitimate institution is ever going to create a secret safe account for you and ask you to fund it with gold bars handed to a stranger in a parking lot or stacks of gift cards.
Never.
But because of that amygdala hijack, the victim simply cannot see the absurdity of their request. Once the money moves, it is laundered through professional money mules, shell companies, or converted into crypto and sent overseas.
It is an absolute masterclass in emotional manipulation. But, you know, we're also seeing a transition from these fast-paced, panic-inducing scams to more sophisticated, long-term, tech-enabled frauds.
Oh, for sure.
Take the family emergency scam, what everyone knows as the grandparent scam, where someone claims your family member is in jail or the hospital. Here's where it gets really interesting. Yeah. We don't just have random actors pretending to be your grandson anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Artificial intelligence has completely changed the game.
What's fascinating here is how little data the criminals actually need to pull this off. We are talking about AI voice cloning.
Which is terrifying.
It is. Using just a short, publicly available audio sample from a social media video, Maybe a clip of your daughter giving a toast at a wedding or laughing in a TikTok. Criminals can generate a voice that sounds exactly like her.
And the scary part is, the AI doesn't even have to be a perfect clone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't need to withstand a 10-minute interrogation. It only needs to sound just enough like your loved one crying out for help to trigger that sheer terror we talked about earlier.
Just a few seconds of crying is enough.
Right. You hear your grandson crying, saying he's been in a car accident and needs bail money. And before you can process the slight robotic distortion in the audio, the fake lawyer gets on the phone to demand the funds.
The panic overrides the logic. You don't pause to verify the story because you are convinced your family member is in immediate physical danger.
But AI and technology aren't just used for quick panic. The source material points out that investment and romance scams actually cause the highest reported financial losses.
The slow burns.
Yeah, if the false security scam is a smash and grab, these the slow burns. They operate like a rigged casino, where the house controls exactly what you see on the screen.
These long cons often start on social media, messaging apps, or dating platforms. The criminal invests weeks, sometimes months, building trust and a genuine emotional connection with the victim.
Like a real relationship.
It is a slow, methodical grooming process. Once the trust is established, they introduce an opportunity usually involving cryptocurrency, foreign exchange, or precious metals.
And just like a rigged casino, they let you win early on just to ensure you'll bet the house later. They direct you to a professional-looking website or app that displays completely fabricated account balances and profits.
It looks totally legitimate.
Yeah, you put in $1,000, it supposedly grows to $2,000, and they actually let you take out $500. It completely solidifies your belief that the platform is genuine.
That small withdrawal is the hook. Once you trust them, they encourage progressively larger investments. They will persuade older adults to borrow money, liquidate their retirement funds, or release equity from their homes.
All for fake numbers on a screen.
And the rigged casino only shuts its doors when the victim finally attempts to withdraw the big money.
That's when the trap snaps shut. Suddenly, there is a new tax that has to be paid, or an anti-money laundering clearance fee, or an insurance cost.
Always another fee.
The psychological grip here relies heavily on the sunk cost fallacy. The victim has already put so much money in, they convince themselves that if they just pay this one last fee, they'll get it all back. But the money is never released. It was gone the moment they made the first deposit.
And with romance scams, the devastation is twofold. You lose your financial security, and you lose someone you genuinely believed cared for you.
The heartbreak on top of the bankruptcy.
The psychological toll often vastly outweighs the financial one. In some cases, romance scam victims are even unwittingly turned into money mules, asked to receive and forward funds from other victims, which can expose them to criminal prosecution on top of their own ruin.
So we've mapped out international syndicates and AI deepfakes. But there's a section in the source material that is far more unsettling, because the threat isn't sitting in a boiler room overseas.
No, it's not.
Sometimes the threat is sitting right at the victim's kitchen table.
We have to talk about exploitation by trusted persons. Relatives, caregivers, friends, legal representatives, and people holding powers of attorney. Elder financial exploitation is much broader than just stranger-initiated scams.
The betrayal of trust here is just hard to stomach.
Yeah.
How are these trusted individuals actually pulling this off day to day?
They use their proximity and the victim's reliance on them to steal right under everyone's noses. A caregiver might start by just helping with groceries, but slowly they begin screening the mail, answering the phone, and isolating the older adult from other family members.
Cutting them off from the outside world.
Exactly. They might gaslight the victim about their own memory to gain control of their finances. Once they have access or fraudulently obtain a power of attorney, they withdraw funds, transfer assets to themselves, secretly change wills, sell off property, or bill the estate for caregiving services that were never actually provided.
Okay, but if I'm a compliance officer at a bank or even just a concerned neighbor, I can't just assume every adult child helping their parent is a criminal.
Of course not.
How do they actually spot the difference between a legitimate transaction and a coerced one? Don't older people have the right to make their own choices, to gift money to their kids, even if we as outsiders think those choices are unwise?
It is an incredibly complex issue, and the source material acknowledges that tension. An older customer absolutely retains the right to make decisions that others might consider unwise.
Right.
A relative conducting transactions isn't automatically acting improperly. Institutions cannot simply assume that age equals incapacity. The focus must be on consent, capacity, and identifying subtle shifts in established patterns.
What kind of behavioral markers expose the exploitation then?
They look for the shrinking world effect. Warning signs include a new caregiver suddenly taking total control of communications, or unexplained, sudden changes to contact details like the phone number on the bank account being swapped to the caregiver's cell phone.
So the bank can't even reach the victim directly anymore.
Exactly. Or maybe an older customer comes into the branch and they appear fearful. Or they are completely unable to speak privately because the relative insists on answering every single question and physically prevents the customer from even reviewing their own documents.
That would be a huge red flag.
It's about spotting undue influence and a sudden loss of autonomy.
It's not about stopping them from spending money. It's about making sure they're the ones actually deciding to spend it without a thumb on the scale.
Perfectly said.
Which brings us to the solution side of this deep dive. If the deception, whether from a stranger on the phone or a caregiver in the living room, is this complete, how do we build a defense? What should you, the listener, actually do to protect yourself or your aging Karens right now?
The document lays out several steps to build a resilient control stack, but there is one golden rule that stands above all others. Independent verification.
Independent verification.
This is the most critical protective habit you can develop. If you receive an unexpected call, a text message, or a computer pop-up, that initial contact should never, ever determine how you verify the claim.
Do not trust caller ID.
Never trust caller ID. Criminals spoof legitimate numbers effortlessly. Do not trust the email branding and do not call the telephone number supplied by the person who just contacted you.
So what do you do?
You must end the communication immediately. Hang up the phone. Then you independently contact the organization through a known official channel, a number on the back of your credit card, an official bank statement, or a trusted directory.
Just take back control of the interaction.
Yes. If your supposed grandson calls from a strange number saying he's in jail, hang up and call your grandson's actual phone number or call his parents. You have to break the spell of urgency.
There's also a really powerful tool mentioned in the text for dealing with financial institutions directly, and that's naming a trusted contact. I want to be really clear about what this is because it's brilliant. Naming a trusted contact on your GLUMP account does not give that person authority over your money.
Right. It is not a power of attorney.
Right. They cannot withdraw funds or make changes to your investments.
It simply gives the bank someone independent to call if they spot warning signs.
Right. If the bank sees you suddenly liquidating your retirement account to wire money overseas and you won't break the script the fraudster gave you, the bank can call your trusted contact and say, hey, something is wrong here. Can you check on them?
It's a safety net.
It preserves the older adult autonomy while adding a massive safety net.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this concept of safety nets is exactly what financial crime leaders within the banking industry need to be focusing on. Fraud against older adults cannot be solved just by telling customers to be more careful.
The system has to help.
The industry has to step up by connecting human behavior with financial data. A bank transfer might be technically authorized, like the customer typed in the right password and passed the two-factor authentication, but it still might be the result of coercion or deception. Financial institutions need to introduce what the text calls proportionate friction.
Proportionate friction. Slowing things down just enough to break the trance.
The goal of the strongest controls is to create an opportunity for independent thought before irreversible value leaves the financial system. If an older customer suddenly tries to wire $50,000 to a crypto exchange they've never used before, the bank shouldn't just process it instantly because the password was correct.
They need to flag it?
They need to recognize the unusual behavior, pause the transaction, ask enhanced questions, and treat the customer interaction as an intelligence source. They need to intervene before a manufactured emergency becomes a permanent loss.
But what do you do if the absolute worst happens and the money is gone? The text is very clear on this: speed is everything. You must act immediately. Contact the bank, the card issuer, or the crypto platform the second you realize it's a fraud.
Do not wait.
If you report it quickly, transfers might still be traceable or capable of being recalled. You need to freeze accounts, change online credentials, and disconnect compromised devices. Take screenshots of messages, keep the phone numbers, save the receipts, write down the descriptions of any couriers, and report it to the authorities.
And crucially, victims must be warned about recovery scams.
Oh man, the recovery scams.
The criminals know you have been victimized, they still have your data, and they will contact you again weeks later. They will pretend to be law enforcement or a specialized recovery agency, claiming they can get your stolen money back for an upfront fee.
It is just a lie.
It's just the same criminals bleeding the victim a second time.
It's sickening. and it highlights a really important emotional takeaway from this entire deep dive. If a family member falls for one of these scams, the worst thing you can do is blame them or make them feel stupid.
Never.
The text specifically highlights that shame is the criminal's strongest protection. When victims delay reporting the crime because they are embarrassed, it only gives the criminals more time to launder the funds. The only proper response from families is practical assistance, empathy, and immediate action, not blame.
Protecting older adults isn't about assuming they lack capacity. It's about recognizing how incredibly sophisticated these networks are at exploiting trust, fear, and isolation. Under the right circumstances, anyone can be a victim.
It really is a whole new world we are navigating. And as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought to mull over, building on what we discussed about AI voice cloning.
Yeah, that's the part that sticks with you.
Think about how much of your life is online right now. Our voices, our family trees, our personal histories, our vacation photos, they are all publicly available data. We know that AI can now perfectly synthesize the sound, the pitch, and the cadence of our loved ones in distress, using just a few seconds of audio.
Just a tiny clip.
So the question I want to leave you with is this. Are we entering an era where the baseline of family communication requires us to live with a constant underlying paranoia? Are we moving into a future where every time the phone rings with an emergency, we have to assume the voice on the other end of the line might not actually be human? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay vigilant out there.